Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Sure.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 151 for the week of April 3rd, 2017. I am Important Stonehenge Gathering David T. Cole, and I'm here with Tax Deadline Sarah D. Bunting.
Your mom's a W-2.
Hardy Crocus Tarariano.
I'm Purple AF.
And Spring Breaker John Ramos.
Why are you even going after this idiot demographic?
Welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Great. Joining us this week is frequent returner John Ramos. Hello, John.
Hi, Juanito.
Hi, everyone.
Hello, John.
Hi. Yay!
John has joined us because it's that time of year when all of the mid-season shows seem to be returning, and so we thought we would do a roundup of what we're looking forward to and otherwise. So let's get into it. That's our spring. Starting with the imminently premiering or returning show that you're into. So I'll go first. The Handmaid's Tale. Oh, my God. Coming to Hulu later this month. This is the adaptation of the Margaret Atwood book. Looks like maybe the only one we're going to get. There was talk of the other dystopic trilogy that she did, the Flood series, that was going to be an HBO show with Darren Aronofsky, but I think that was announced in like 2014, and that was the last I heard of it, so that might be it. But The Handmaid's...
Is that the Oryx and Crake?
Yes. But this one is an adaptation of her 1985 novel about an America that's been taken over by an ultra-religious cult of Christians, quote-unquote, renamed Gilead, and fertile women have been turned into handmaids when they have assigned to various highly placed government officials to basically carry children for their infertile wives. I have to say, Hulu has been leaning real hard on the parallels to our current dystopia, and I'm here for it. I haven't watched the show yet. We got screeners of the first three, which the first three are going to drop on the 25th, I believe, or 26th. I'll look that up and confirm. But it'll be three to begin with, and then one a week after that for a 10-episode first season. But I reread the book. God, it's so good. It's really, I mean, it's horrible, but it's great. And I also read recently, I forget if it was on this podcast or somewhere else or possibly just on Twitter, that Dave dragged me for telling him that I wished that The Handmaid's Tale were a graphic novel so he would read it. There's going to be one, so joke's on you.
Maybe I can read regular books.
I know, but that's not normally what you read.
I just discovered comic books in the last year and a half, so I'm just catching up on a whole bunch of stuff.
Yes, Sarah is right. There is graphic shit in the... in the book, so that would be well represented. And
both of you know I never learned to read.
I didn't want to say anything.
It was too short to reach the grown-up books at the library.
That line was for our Canadian listeners.
Yes, they all got a real nice shiver from that one. Anyway, confirmed. It is. It does premiere on Hulu Wednesday, April 26th. So I'll be covering it. You better believe I snatched that shit up for myself on previously.tv. But very excited for that one. So that is my pick. Who else has read the book?
I've read the book.
It's good, right?
Yeah, it's really good. I haven't read it. I actually won a copy of the book, All Francais.
I can send it to you because
I might.
Fascinating, guys.
We don't really need to negotiate this on the podcast. Hello.
No, we don't.
Listeners.
Sorry. It's a good book. Will be a good show. Let's move on. John, what's a new or returning show that you're looking forward to?
Sacred Spring is broken.
I'm looking forward to Sarah typing that entire French translation into Google Translate and seeing what comes out. But as far as shows returning, Tara, I'm glad you didn't do this, even though I'm sure it's on your list, so I can do it, but it's Angie Tribeca.
Oh, it is on my list. Yep.
It's still so, so dumb. It can be, last season proved that it can be dumb not only moment to moment, but it can be season arc dumb.
Yes.
And it's just dumb no matter what, and just makes me laugh every time. Seriously, like, the gag from the second episode ever about the little mole still, like, makes me laugh whenever I think about it. Like, Adam Scott being like, yeah, definitely come in.
Yes, there is something perverse about long-term planning stupidity, isn't there?
Yes.
Yeah.
You have to admire the craft of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when it involves James Franco, I guess, so much the better. It's going to be even dumber.
Yes. Looks like Chris Evans has a big part this season, too.
We've gone into this on the podcast many times before, but Angie Tribeca, it brings a smile to my face every time.
It's delightful. And that returns this Monday coming, April 10th, on TBS. Moving on to Sarah D. Bunting.
I have a bunch, but I tried to pick the one that I figured no one else would pick, which is Bosch.
Oh,
on
yeah.
Amazon, sure. Stars Titus Welliner. Mm-hmm. It's this like L.A. noir detective story. He follows and kind of unfolds a whole new case every season. I didn't read the books, so I don't really have any basis for comparison, but it's always cast really well. Like, his kid is in it, but she's like useful and not annoying. I like the show because it's sort of like all these, not B-list actors, but just sort of like character actors that get to be the star. And it's shot in this way that makes me like miss being in LA. Mm. It really gets the quality of the light right. Mm-hmm. I think. John, have you watched any of it?
I haven't, no, but I know
I'd be interested to hear what you think about it, just because his ex-wife is like a professional gambler and card counter. Like, that's her job. She used to be a profiler, and now she plays poker for a living. I just think that's like, why aren't there a million characters like that on TV?
Seriously.
I just think it's fun.
Yeah.
And she's played by, I can't remember the actress's name. She was Nina on the first season of 24. Help me.
Nina.
Sarah something.
Clark?
The mole. Spoiler.
Clark?
Yes.
What is her name?
Can't remember now. Damn it. Whatever. We'll get back to it. But yeah, Bosch is good. I believe the whole season drops this coming Friday, the 7th. I will check on that for the show notes. But yeah, it's not all that taxing procedural, but it's like, it's a good procedural. And then it's on Amazon Prime. So there's like, you know, swearing and fucking and stuff. So yeah, it's good.
Confirmed it is Sarah Clark with an E.
Thank you.
All right, so mine is Better Call Saul.
Oh, I was going to say, can I guess what it is? And I was wrong.
Oh, what were you going to say?
I thought you were going to say American Gods.
That is my follow-up.
Okay, we'll
so
get to that.
So I did one returning and one new one. So my returning show is Better Call Saul. Mm-hmm. We have watched the first two episodes of the new season, and I don't know when they actually air.
That show premieres April 10th.
Okay, so really good, still really interesting. Without spoiling anything, there is like a episode long journey through a mechanical puzzle that sounds like on paper it should be the most boring thing ever, but it is fascinating to watch unfold. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't hurt that it involves Mike, which is great. And then the other thing, I think it's the character that's introduced this season that's out there, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's been at South by Southwest. So we also get the return of Gus Fring.
Woo!
Tara's favorite character
wait.
Ever.
The pre-turn of Gus Fring.
Right.
Oh, my God.
And the way that is introduced and how, like, everybody's life is sort of getting sucked into the gravity well that, you know, Gus Fring creates mm-hmm. is... That seems to be what is driving a lot of this season. And we still have the sibling rivalry going on between Jimmy and his brother, too. And his brother is one of the like real low key dirtbags of all time.
For sure.
Like,
yes.
It is amazing.
Gosh,
yeah.
Yes.
And so still a really high quality show. Two episodes in, really enjoying it. Can't wait to see more. And I like how they're bringing back some of the stuff from Breaking Bad without actually kind of making it into...
Without being showy about it.
Yeah, yeah. And making it into like Breaking Bad redo. And then, yes, my other one,
let's come back to that. Oh.
My new show is American Gods. I'm super excited about it. I hope it doesn't let me down. All the trailers and everything for it look pretty decent. So I am hopeful. The book.
Oh, there's just...
Well, there's like a... there's another book that sort of takes place in the same universe, but it's not like a sequel or anything.
Dave, you know what I just realized? Mike's last name on Breaking Bad would be a great Dave word.
Yeah, don't give people any ideas.
Well, before we move on to our next category, I had alts for this one too. So I will say the other shows that I'm looking forward to are Claws on TNT. This is the nail salon dramedy.
Oh, no.
With Niecy Nash. I feel like I saw Carrie Preston in a promo too. I'm just going to look that up because that would be amazing if I was seeing the right crazy looking redhead. But that's coming this month, I believe. I will watch Niecy Nash do anything, but setting a soap in a nail salon is such a good idea. Yeah. Yes, that is her. So that'll be really fun.
I had a couple of alts, including ones that other people have mentioned. But one of mine is Prison Break, the non-reboot.
Yep.
And which I wanted to mention because I was so over it with that show when it did end. And I have no idea how they're going to get around the fact that at the end, Michael Scofield had an inoperable brain tumor that he chose to treat by like exploding himself in a women's prison.
Sure.
So I don't really understand how you go back from that. But in any case, he and Dominic Purcell had such good chemistry on Legends of Tomorrow that I was very excited to see what a new take on Prison Break would be like now that they could be a little more like winky and that they would work together better since they weren't trying to out blue steel each other all the time. So I'm interested to see how that shapes up and that premieres as you are listening to this tonight.
Last night.
Is it this Wednesday?
Yeah, no, it's tonight. It's tonight
so
as we record this. It did premiere.
It's Tuesday, April 4th.
Is the premiere? Yes.
Thank you.
And Lisa Schmeiser, who wrote the new show fact sheet for it, she was also similarly dubious, but she's super bullish on it. So if that helps, she was really into it. So yeah,
it does.
All right, let us move on to things that we should be into but aren't. I'm going to keep this brief. Mine is Fargo. We watched the premiere this weekend too. And I will say this one didn't grab me as much as the season one and season two premieres did. And I don't know if it's because I hated Legion so much that it's tainted Fargo for me by association because they're both from the same creator, Noah Hawley. But this one, it just did not do it for me. I will probably still watch the season. I will not be covering it for previously.tv. But Dave, what did you think?
I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
It did seem like a little portion of like Fargo the movie from about like a third the way into it when you know what I mean? Like it wasn't a lot of things to like grab you, although I am very interested on where the opening sequence, which seems to take place nowhere near Fargo.
Uh-huh.
How that ties back into, you know, what's going on in Minnesota. So that is interesting. But I understand that you would find the pilot a little underwhelming, a little low key. You know, there were some great little spots. I think the one thing that will like stood out for me in a bad way was Scoot McNairy's performance was just so cartoony.
Yeah.
In the face of, Fargo characters are sort of caricatures a lot of the time, but his performance seemed even outside of that.
Well, I will say very inept criminals are also a hallmark of Coen Productions too.
Yeah, but there was just something off about that. Like he just seemed to be like almost like he was ready to be animated or something like it. But there were some like neat little things that happened and I'm still interested. I wasn't as down on Legion as you were.
You stopped watching it, though.
I did stop watching it. I stopped watching it when their eyes appeared on some wall during the drug trip episode or something. I'm like, I'm out. I just don't have the patience for
I was not
another
really
show where I have to wonder, you know, where the whole conceit is, are we in reality or not? And right. It's like, just guys, I already, I went through one season of Westworld. I don't have the patience for another, but it didn't has no bearing on my enjoyment of Fargo because I'm a more mature person than you are.
Fine. I'll say this about the premiere, though, that someone gets dispatched in a way that will play into a lot of people's nightmares about urban living. And that's all I'm going to say.
Oh, boy.
Without spoiling it. Okay, let's move on to John. Show you should be into, but so aren't.
My show I should be into, and I don't, I'm kind of stretching this category because I already know I'm not really into it after two seasons, but it's Grace and Frankie.
Oh, okay, sure.
It's again, I mean, I've written about it, so I won't go on, but it's like the strengths of it, I really like the two older female leads, June Diane Raphael, those are the good parts. The bad parts are the, quote, gay husbands and the other kids, three of which I can't tell apart, even though one of them's a woman and one of them's African-American. and I had in my notes that I'll probably still watch and feel conflicted about it. But I had a Twitter exchange last night that makes me think that I'm probably not going to now because one friend of the show, Brett Stewart, said that he started watching it and switched to a rerun of Big Little Lies within like 5 minutes. So I don't know. I kind of trust that read.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I have the patience for another season of mediocrity. So
fair enough. That one I didn't even get on board with season two. So I hear you. That one is already streaming on Netflix. And I forgot to say before, Fargo is April 19th is when it premieres. Sarah D. Bunting.
Brockmire. I've now heard from like four different sources that this IFC dramedy, I guess, about this like disgraced alcoholic minor league baseball announcer played by Hank Azaria, who returns to the States and is hired by team owner Amanda Peet to try to breathe some life into the local minor league franchise in, I think, central Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating concept. Minor league baseball is like full of a gazillion hilarious stories. Chris Huff did the new show fact sheet for it on previously.tv. He really liked it. He thought it had a lot of potential. But the thing about baseball shows is that they almost never work for me. And even though this isn't really about baseball, it's like I already have gotten enough emails and questions about it from other people that I feel like obligated to have an opinion on it. Like if you were a sort of out feminist a few years ago, you were supposed to feel ways about girls, and that's why I stopped watching, so that I wouldn't have to talk about it anymore. Also because the show is idiotic. But I can't care. Like, I don't know. It looks okay. I think this is probably a great role for Hank Azaria. I really like Amanda Peet. I want her to get a show that lasts. She deserves it. But I'm not going to try it. And I think I'm just being like stubborn for no reason. But after Pitch, it's like, I'm not even going to try these anymore.
Yeah, no, I get it. That premiered April 4th, in that, as we said, on IFC. David.
Okay. So returning show I should be into, but am not. And I am going to go with Archer.
Yeah, that was one.
That was on my list too. An alt of mine.
And it's not like the quality of the show has changed drastically. And I think we've talked about this before, but it's just so rote right now. You know, there's a formula, they're following it. You know, here's a couple double entendres. You know, here's the vague reference to 1940s baseball or something like that thrown in there. Blah 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 blah. And now that they're sort of like hooking on to these, you know, each season has its own little tag, you know,
gimmick.
The Miami Vice one. I'm just like, unless they reinvent themselves, I'm just kind of done. Like it's like comfort TV, but it's not like I don't laugh at it anymore because what's coming for all of them. So, which is a shame because when it first started, it was like super funny and fresh, but maybe it's just like, you get used to it, and you know, it stops becoming haha funny and just becomes something comfortable, you know, just becomes hot chocolate on a cold night television.
Yeah. I have the same relationship now with It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I could watch a new episode and it'll go straight out of my head, mm-hmm. but I could watch the season two episodes that I love and still like be really entertained by them. I think I only have enough room for so many episodes of that show before it all runs together. And Archer's kind of the
Sometimes
same.
Sometimes you just fall out of love.
It's true.
Yeah.
All right, my alternates. Anne, this is the reboot of Anne of Green Gables. It's currently on CBC in Canada, I believe, but it's coming to Netflix May 12th. This was a mini series that did not need to be remade. The original from the 80s with Megan Follows is perfect, with Colleen Dewhurst and Richard Farnsworth as Marilla and Matthew. I realize I'm talking to a boy and two Americans, like, you guys don't know, but this is a very foundational text for Canadian girls, and I'm sure the new one is fine. I will watch it, but R.H. Thompson is not my Matthew. Hashtag not my Matthew. So I get where they're going. They're trying to bring it to a new generation, but they didn't need to do that. It's already a period show. It was fine, the one that they did. And so that's how I feel.
Is it like still set in PEI and all that?
Yeah.
Okay, it's not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. But the opening theme song, to give you an example of the liberties they're taking, is Ahead by a Century by Tragically Hip.
Yeah.
No. I reject. No, just flat nope. Nope to that. Yeah. So I'm not super hopeful, but I will probably at least watch the first one.
If they're going with a Canadian rock song.
Uh-huh.
Should they go with like Taking Care of Business or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. John, you had no alt. So Sarah, what were your honorable mentions?
My honorable mentions were Archer and actually American Gods. Neil Gaiman is one of those creators that I'm so glad that he exists. I think that he has great value, and I have tried, but it's just not for me, and this won't be either. So
yeah. But the other thing about Neil Gaiman is like some of his stuff is super awesome and some of his stuff is like so impenetrable and like dull. Mostly
and there's fairies involved.
Yeah,
and it's like,
exactly. So you have to pick. You have to like honestly, like I don't think any Neil Gaiman is for you, Sarah. But like if you're on the fence on some stuff, you really need like a Gaiman Sherpa. Like because I've started to read stuff. I'm like nope. So now I know. Like I like the stuff where he deals with mythology and weaves a story out of that. So like Sandman, American Gods, and Neverwhere, I think that's what it's called. Those were really good. And in his new book, that is just his interpretations and retellings of actual North myths called North Mythology, is excellent. And it just came out. So if you're into Neil Gaiman and you're into North mythology, I cannot recommend that book enough.
Norse, you mean?
And he personally is a mensch. Like, super responsive to fans. He's like been a presence online from day one and is like just a smart guy and has retweeted me a couple of times and linked to me when he didn't have to do that. And I'm still not sure why he did that. Like, he is great.
Yeah.
But you got to try this. You'll love it. And then there's like a, you know, Will of the Wisp with pointy ears on the cover. And it's like, I should have known.
Yeah.
He strikes me as the Anthony Bourdain of sci fantasy in a way that I can't quite put my finger on.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
All right. Let us move on to a new or returning show no one should be into. I had a few for this, but I'll go with the one that I'm most angry at, which is Problematic with Moshe Kasher. This is a show coming to Comedy Central. Moshe Kasher is a stand-up comic. He is very funny. But here's the description of his show. The weekly series invites viewers to bring their online outrage into the studio for a raucous discussion of today's most polarizing topics from social media with the help of experts, comedians, and the studio audience. No thanks. I live in the world. I use social media. I don't need to seek this out and have it repackaged as a TV show. Like, I get enough uninvited stupid opinions from people that follow
me
on Twitter.
We stopped repackaging web stuff into other media a little while ago. Like, remember the Tumblr to book year. Yes. Like, that's done. Yeah. Like, let's just let the internet be the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, like the 6-year-old executives making these decisions are like, well, we have to have something cyber on the menu. You know, like, let's, yes, let's put them out the pasture and let's, yes, just realize.
Get Barron Trump on the line.
Yeah. TV do things better. Internet, yeah, do things better.
Yeah. But also the idea of like, we're going to be deliberately provocative. Like, no, first of all, you're not, because you're on basic cable. Like, you're not interesting. Like, I can't.
This sounds like that old Pepsi commercial that The Simpsons also parody. Do you know where the old people start drinking Pepsi, yes, and then they start dancing on the beach, yes, and shit? Like, that sounds like, yes, basically this show.
But the whole, like, we don't care who we offend is, yeah, like, so tiresome. Like, it's,
I do what I want.
Yeah. Then totally, you turn 14.
Care who you offend. Otherwise, no one's going to care what you do.
Exactly.
Nope.
So, moving on to John.
Okay, I'm so glad I can defy someone on the panel's expectations about this, but my show I'm definitely not into is Anne.
No!
And that is because any TV adaptation that doesn't have Colleen Dewhurst intoning Anne with an E is not Green Gables, as far as I'm concerned.
John!
That may be unfair. I stand by it.
I had no idea you were an Anne-ed.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. We could have been talking about it this whole time.
I read the books, too.
That's amazing.
Oh, I read the books.
Oh, God. I'm sorry. I should not have profiled you as Americans who would not have known anything about
it. We got the Canadian programming that really mattered. So.
That's true. I guess they did air on PBS. Yeah. All right. That's totally 100% fair. Sarah.
Mine is, I actually had to hunt around for one, because everything that's coming up or coming back looks pretty good. Or I hadn't heard of it because I wouldn't care. But the sitcom Imaginary Mary looks,
yeah,
absolutely asinine. Like, you know that irritable bowel syndrome commercial with the woman who's like trying to go to meetings and then her annoying, like, badly bewigged, slim good body meets Kathy Griffin, like, living diarrhea is like, nope, we're going to the bathroom.
What?
Intimately. Have you never seen this ad, Dave?
No.
They must air it all the time.
I'm trying to parse that sentence, but I'm having a lot of trouble, guys.
It's 100% real, and they must only show those ads, Sarah, in Law & Order reruns, because I've seen it a trillion times.
Live sports, too.
Of course.
Or should I say pew?
What
anyway,
is the product? Sorry?
It's a drug for people that have your IBS.
Oh, okay.
Which, like, don't people with IBS have enough problems? That's the commercial that markets to them. Yikes. It's not quite as bad as the tiny little pink bladder pulling mom out of game night, but it's pretty bad.
Well, we watched the premiere of Imaginary Mary because they sneak peeked it last week. I thought it was okay.
I cannot with Jenna Elfman. Like, never mind the premise,
yeah,
that she's basically in the role of the diarrhea lady, right?
Yeah, no, correct. Dave, you made a face. You didn't think, you thought it was bad?
I thought it was instantly forgettable. And it's just like a gimmick kind of thing.
It made me laugh a couple of times.
It's going to last half a season.
That's probably true. But Rachel Dratch is the voice of the imaginary
friend. Until they run out of money and then the doll has to be an actual physical object. And you can see it's always behind, half behind a pillow and shit.
Yeah. It's not the worst thing I've ever seen. But yes, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it either. Yeah. Moving on.
No.
To Dave.
All right. So I'll wrap this up. On principle alone, I have not seen this show. I harbor the host of this show and his other many shows no ill will. But on principle, we as a society must stand up and say, Chris Hardwick, you can host no more shows. Therefore, the show that nobody should be into is Talking with Chris Hardwick.
Wait.
Some new, he's got another show.
Wait, I thought that was an April Fool's joke, and I am not kidding. It's, I did not think that was real.
So did I.
It's on the list. It's on that deadline list.
Oh, my God.
He's got, you know, if it was an April Fool's joke, they really fleshed it out because they got the list of hosts for the first, or a guest for the first week and everything. You know, God bless Chris Hardwick. He made a career out of saying everything about nerd culture is great and throwing it back into people that just wanted to hear it.
Yeah.
And his stand-up comedy is actually very funny, and he's pretty funny when we saw him at Douglas Movies. Like, he's
very
a genuine guy, but his TV persona bothers me so much. and he's got so many shows. He's like, how many people are going hungry and starving because he has to host every one of these things? So we're just going to say no to Talking with Chris Hardwick. Could be the best talk show ever.
It won't.
It won't. But it could be, but we're not going to find out, right, guys? Everybody listening, because we're as a listenership standing up and saying, Chris Hardwick, you got enough shows.
We're not watching with Extra Hot Grade.
All right. I had two alternates, which are The Circus, the Showtime weekly show about the election and politics by the guys that wrote Game Change. Who wants to watch this? Like, we live it. Why would I want a 30-minute digest of all the horrible shit that happened last week every Sunday night? Like, Sundays aren't nightmarish enough. Oh, sorry. I can't do it.
It's for grandpas. I don't.
Fair enough.
No defense. You're right. I'm just saying. Who wants to watch that? Your wife.
Fair enough. I mean, I do watch the news. That's the thing. Like, I get enough, especially on Sundays with all the fucking magazine shows. But anyway, my other one is the Sundance show with Pierce Brosnan that we've mentioned in a mini a couple weeks ago. The Sun.
I do.
That's your alt?
Uh-huh.
Who was the show
for? It looks
like
this news.
Pierce on wheels? Like, why is this show? Who wants it? It looks so boring. Like, I get that living in the prestige TV era means that anything can be a show, but, like, an Old West show with Pierce Brosnan? No, thank you. Did you have other alts, or did I name it? Did I get them all?
Yeah, I'm done.
All right. That's our spring wrap-up. Thank you.
Colby Smulders.
Say it again.
Colby Smulders.
Close.
What?
It's just Kobe.
Oh. Oh,
there's
no,
there's
L?
No.
All right. Thank you for that Dave word. $20 gets you to say, and apparently it's Dave word, and now I guess the users have decided, or a name.
Uh-huh.
That's fine with me.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, the person that wrote that in said the last name of that actress always gives her trouble. She always has to think about it. I imagine she probably says
Smulders
or something like that. And I'm like, yeah, no problem. And then I say Colby because I'm what? An idiot. Previously, .tv/ads to buy your ads. Time to go around the dial. Our first stop, Tara Ariano.
I'll keep this brief because I think Dave and I are the only ones on the panel who watched Review. John, did you watch it? I know Sarah didn't.
I didn't.
So it had its series finale last week, had a very short, just 3-episode final season. And it got really dark. Like, the show was pretty dark to begin with, but honestly, we were like 2/3 of the way through that finale, and I said to Dave, this either could end with him getting back together with his wife or dying, and I'm not sure which I'm rooting for. The last 3 episodes were sort of a reckoning for Forrest of trying to figure out what he is as a human allowed to grant himself in terms of, like, not doing some reviews. And so there was one of the episodes where he was asked to review being a co-host, which meant his normal co-host AJ Gibb got to go and do the task, and just came, it was what is it like to smack a stranger's ass? And she came back and just said, I called my boyfriend and he didn't think I should do it. So I agree. It was more important for me to respect his wishes. And so I just didn't do it. And Forrest was like, what? Like, just could not understand that she would choose to decline to do it. Anyway, it ended in, I guess it was satisfying. It felt, by the time we got to the end of it, the way it ended felt inevitable. Would you agree, Dave?
Yeah. Yeah.
So people who watched it will know what that means. And if you liked the canon presentation that we did many episodes ago with Pancakes Divorce, first season episode.
Yeah.
God. It's worth going back and watching the show from the beginning if you thought that one sounded funny. That's very typical of the run of the show. And it's a short run. They're all on they should all be on the for sure on the Comedy Central app, but I think the first two seasons at least are on Hulu as well. So yeah, it's it ended in the only way it could, and I was glad that it existed, and I'm surprised it existed as long as it did, to be honest. Also, lots of great James Urbaniak stuff in those last three episodes. Speaking of diabolical geniuses, he's the Chuck McGill of review. Yeah. So that was mine and my plugs. As I mentioned last week, Allison Lohuff and I are doing a new podcast on the Previously.tv podcast network called After Birth. It's the Call the Midwife podcast. Our first episode went up Sunday night, so you can find that if you go to Previously.tv and look at podcasts. Also, you can also search it. It's on all your podcast apps. And I want to give a shout out to friend of the pod, Dan Rogge, and his former collaborator Tracy Potochnik are doing a podcast about Monica the Musical, their mid-2000s satirical retelling in song of the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Remember that scandal? Seems so quaint now. They're going a few songs per episode and just telling the story of how they all got made. And oh my God, this I will warn you, though, the songs are unbelievably catchy. One from the last, not the latest episode, but the second has been running through my head every night as I try to fall asleep. So be warned, they're super duper catchy, but it's also on all your favorite podcast apps. Check that out, Monica the Podcast.
John Ramos.
Okay, so I want to talk about Tara Ariona's favorite show, Legion.
Finally.
So the season is over, and wow. At times it was up its own ass, up Noah Hawley's ass, up Gene Smart's ass, up the ass of every crew member and VE artist who worked on it. But in the end, I kind of liked it. I cannot recommend it unreservedly at all. I don't think it works for anyone unfamiliar with at least some X-Men mythology. I would have lost patience for it if I hadn't been able to figure out who the big bad was from the mythology that I already knew. And you definitely have to endure a lot of what Liz Lemon would probably lump together as hipster nonsense, including one character's reverence for jazz and beat poetry. But in the end, I think they did a decent job of visually representing what having mental powers like the lead characters would be like. And I also don't know if this was intentional, but the lead character has basically never been clinically sane in his entire life for reasons external to himself. And because of that, the show has an element of mental health metaphor that I find interesting. The acting was also really good. Dan Stevens has a range that I hadn't seen before. Once I figured out what she was doing, Aubrey Plaza was really good. And Gene Smart is, of course, Gene Smart. So if you thought the show might tick your boxes, but you weren't sure, I would say give it a shot. Otherwise, I would say leave it on the shelf.
Yeah, that's fair.
And for my plug, I'm actually off Previously TV right now, although there's something that we may be able to announce soon. But in the meantime, I wanted to plug my new documentary. It's called What Lies Upstream.
Nice.
It's on water contamination. If you follow me on Twitter, you can find information about it. And it should be available on broadcast TV later this year.
Yeah. Awesome.
We'll link it up in the show notes, too.
For sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm going to talk about 13 Reasons Why. I had heard nothing at all about this show until I happened to read a really good review by Ryan McGee on Pajiba, I think, is where I read it. 13 Reasons Why is on Netflix. It's based on a young adult novel in which a young woman, Hannah, takes her own life. And then a bunch of those varyingly responsible receive a series of cassette tapes detailing why, along with a map. This is not a spoiler. This is like the premise of the show. It happens in the first 5 minutes. I'm only 4 episodes into it so far, but it's like a really interesting, I mean, it's like bleak, but it's really well done. It's sort of like, Veronica Mars meets Brick meets like the actually Twin Peaksy parts of Riverdale, except that Laura Palmer is like solving her own murder that she committed and then kind of blaming it on an entire culture. It's hard to explain, but what's especially good and rare about this show, I think, is that it allows its characters to be variable and inconsistent in a way that seems purposeful and very human. It's not just the brain or jock or whatever John Hughesy Breakfast Club two-line sketch that Hughes tried to send up but also tripped over in the Breakfast Club itself. It's that all of us are different things, different people at different times, sort of like, in fact, that Angela Chase line from My So-Called Life about having to make up a combination you on the spot when two people from two different parts of your life collide. The leads, in particular, Catherine Langford as Hannah, whom we see a lot in flashback, and Dylan Minnette as Clay, who is our and his own Virgil into this confusing grief hell, are really great at making these teenagers not just the expected WB cardboard cutouts with a couple defining traits, but the grab bag of conflicting desires and behaviors that we all are. I'm super excited to finish out the series. Once again, that's 13 Reasons Why, and it is on Netflix. The whole series is available now. My plug is The Blotter Presents, our true crime on TV podcast. Woo. Coming up this week, we have Allison Lohuff on the subject of Disgraced, the Showtime documentary about a murder of a Baylor basketball player by another Baylor basketball player. Ooh. Interesting tie-in to another podcast previously mentioned. There's a current Baylor scandal going on that's, if possible, even worse than the one covered in Disgrace, which happened in 2003, which led to the resignation of the Baylor University president, Ken Starr. So it's all a circle of hell. So that will be dropping this Friday. And then next week, our guest is Toby Ball from Crime Writers On, and we'll be talking about the first Paradise Lost documentary and Casey Anthony, An American Murder Mystery on Investigation Discovery.
When I saw that in the listings, I was like, she better be planning to do this on the blotter. So of course you are. And I can't wait to hear it.
Oh, yeah, not to worry.
Awesome.
Nope, no clams. It's not right.
Hey, man, we're running out of island.
It's right, you know it.
This is the place.
Clams.
When it's good, you can feel it.
A clam bake, good friends, and the right beer. Schlitz. Because you never lose your taste for quality.
How'd you know where they were?
When one coughs, it gives them all away.
There's just one word for beer.
I'm totally serious.
And you know it.
Wow.
Right?
No thanks to all of that.
If there's one thing teenagers like is beaches, clams, and beer.
Is he talking about the clams coughing? Did I hear that
yes.
right?
Yes.
How do you catch them? Well, when one coughs, you find the rest of them.
Sounds like a euphemism for I don't even know no. what.
Anyways, I thought that was amusing. I have for my plug, I'm doing a proxy plug. Leslie paid for an ad, but didn't actually want an ad. She just wanted to support our newest, one of our newest podcasts, Little House on the Podcast. So I told her I would put her money towards a deluxe ad here on Extra Hot Great for said podcast. And I'm going to play this clip from Kim's new podcast. And if you don't want to listen to the whole thing after you hear this clip, you are dead inside.
Who should stroll up but the boss bitch herself, Nellie Olson? She looks down her nose at Laura and Mary and sneers, "Country girls." And I'm sure little Allison Arngrim didn't know all the bad words back then, but she really punches the first syllable of her insult, which is a lot for a family show. So you know what Nellie Olson is all about right from her first appearance. Miss Beadle tries to get the kids to say hello to them, but it's half-hearted at best, and Nellie totally doesn't join in, but just gives Laura the stink eye. Miss Beadle offers to loan them her slate until they can get one, and Nellie sneers again, "Country girls." So Miss Beadle starts with math, and she tells Willie Olson to write something on the board, and Laura is like, "What the fuck is this wizardry where you write on the wall and then you can erase it?" And Nellie makes fun of her for not knowing what a blackboard is. Laura should have been like, "Bitch, until like a month ago, I lived in a hole in the ground and shit in a bucket, so step off."
Oh, boy.
That
I just listened to that within the last hour. I'm not joking.
Little House on the Podcast, available on previously.tv, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere you get podcasts. You can subscribe to that. We're up to season one, episode two. Each episode is about 15 minutes long, so it doesn't take a ton of your time. I would probably describe it as a breathless recap of Little House on the Prairie, Kim Reid style. It is excellent.
Do you know what time it is, guys?
Oh, mini game time.
It's mini game time.
This mini game time is brought to you by Ari, who wishes his lovely wife Lara. I have to say it like a Sporgan.
Lara.
He wishes his lovely wife, Laura, a happy birthday. Laura's current favorite TV show is The Americans. And so we're here today to play Does Laura Consider This American? We'll start with Tara. Your question is, A?
Not American.
I'm sorry. She considers A the first letter of America before all else. All right. Here's your question, John. Mom and apple pie. Does she consider mom and apple pie American? No, she only eats apple pies made from golden noble apples, which we all know are from England. Plus, mom was spelt with a U there. Sarah, Vermont, Idaho, and North Dakota. Does she consider these American? No, they have not sufficiently proven their worth to the Union and therefore cannot be considered truly American. By the dawn's early light, can we get the final scores, please, Tara?
Sarah wins with 1 point.
Thank you for those scores, Tara. But the real winner today is the birthday girl, Laura, whose thoughtful husband, Ari, sends the happiest of birthday wishes, as does everyone here at Extra Hot Great.
Happy birthday, Laura!
It is time for the canon, and this week the user submission comes from Mr. John Potts.
Of all the Star Trek series, Deep Space Nine is the most divisive. It's either the series that moved past the naive utopianism of Gene Roddenberry's Future Society, or a betrayal of the ideas of Star Trek for exactly the same reason. Of all the DS9 episodes, this one is the most epitomises that is the one late season 6, In the Pale Moonlight, and as such I submit it for the canon. To set the scene, this is towards the end of the penultimate season where the titanic war between our heroes, the Federation, their now fairly solid allies, the Klingons, against the totalitarian Dominion and their committed allies, the Cardassian Union. However, the war is going badly for our heroes. They realise the only way they can turn the tide is to bring the only major uncommitted player, the Romulans, into the war on their side. The episode opens on a depressed Captain Sisko drinking a large glass of something, presumably alcoholic, and narrating his log entry to the computer, and by extension the viewers, of where it all went wrong. Following the opening credits, we flash back 2 weeks to see the captain posting the weekly casualty report, a task he dreads. I've grown to hate Fridays, as he puts it. This particular Friday, it's Jadzia Dax, who knows one of the casualties. She and Sisko discuss how, with the neutrality pact between Dominion and the Romulan Empire, the Dominion are able to accidentally pass the Romulan space to stage its attacks.
Let's say I'm the Romulan proconsul. From where I'm sitting, the Dominion isn't a threat to me. I have a non-aggression pact with them. They are my allies.
You're not going to put your faith in some piece of paper, are you?
Not at all. I've been watching them very closely since the beginning of the war, and so far, they've kept their part of the bargain.
They're violating your territory almost every day. What kind of an ally is that?
So they're crossing my backyard to give the Federation a bloody nose. I can't say that makes me feel very sad.
You can't be naive enough to think that the Dominion is going to stop with the Federation. When they're finished with us, they're coming after you.
That's speculation.
The Founders see it as their sacred duty to bring order to the galaxy. Their order. Do you think they'll sit idly by while you keep your chaotic empire right next to their perfect order? No. If you watch us go under, then what you're really doing is signing your own death warrant.
But before I plunge my people into a conflict that will kill millions of loyal Romulan citizens, I need something more concrete than the self-serving argument of a Starfleet officer. I need proof of Dominion duplicity. Not more words. Proof.
Very good, old man.
You would have made a decent Romulan.
So Sisko turns to the station's lone Cardassian, professional tailor, compulsive liar, ambiguously gay, and former spy, Garak. Sisko lays his cards on the table. Without the Romulans, the Federation will probably lose. But the Dominion probably have plans to ultimately conquer Romulus too, so all they need to do is find those plans and leak them to the Romulans. Garak, who has personal reasons of his own for wanting to defeat the Dominion, points out that even though such plans undoubtedly exist, they will be very risky to get hold of. Sisko baits him with, well, if you're not up to the task, but Garak doesn't rise to it, just points out that it could get very messy before the Romulans are brought in, but that it will take all his remaining favours on Cardassia. Sisko replies that it's already messy and that it has to be worth the price, so in the words of Jean-Luc Picard, make it so. Just as Sisko is beginning to regret his choice, he gets news. The Dominion have conquered Beta Zed. Now, while disposing of a few billion useless telepaths might be a bonus for the Federation, strategically it allows the Dominion to launch attacks on Andor, Vulcan or Alpha Centauri, oddly not mentioning Earth, which is only 4 light-years away from Alpha Centauri. More bad news arrives from Garak. All his Cardassian contacts are now dead. Stunned, Sisko expresses regret that his plan has come to nothing, but Garak says, not so fast. Maybe we can't get the real plans, but we can always fake up our own. Sisko seems dubious, but Garak points out that, according to Sisko himself, the fate of the Alpha Quadrant is at stake. So is a little cheating really so bad? There then follows a caper plot where Sisko has to assemble the various MacGuffins to make the plot work, involving various dubious deals with several disreputable characters until we finally get the evidence together to convince the Romulans. Once assembled, it's just a matter of getting that to the Romulans, and Garak, of course, has a plan there too. Give it to Senator Vrenak, the Romulan who negotiated the non-aggression pact with the Dominion. If they can convince him it's real, the rest of the Senate is sure to come round. And it so happens that he's on his way back from a meeting with the Dominion right now, and he might be convinced to put in a stop at Deep Space Nine. So Vrenak's ship arrives, and before the ambassador disembarks, Garak asks to have a look around the ship. A distracted Sisko waves us away and goes to greet Vrenak. The Romulan proves to be not just well-informed, but with every bit of the arrogance associated with his race, and he's not impressed with Sisko either. After a brief chat, the two get down to business. Sisko shows him the evidence of the Dominion's plan for Romulus. Predictably, Vrenak is suspicious and demands to see the rod. Sisko complies and hopes that the fate will stand up to scrutiny. After a stressful wait, we get Vrenak's answer in probably the most memorable scene of the episode.
It's a fake!
So, Sisko's plan is in ruins, and it seems that the Romulans will side ever more with the Dominion. Posting up yet another casualty list, Sisko hears some surprising news. A Romulan diplomatic vessel has exploded on its way back from meeting the Dominion. Suddenly, the pieces come together, and Sisko goes to confront Garak.
You killed him!
That's right.
That's what you planned to do all along, isn't it? You knew the data rod wouldn't hold up to scrutiny. You just wanted to get him on the station so that you could plant a bomb on his shuttle.
It wasn't quite that simple. I did have hopes that the rod would somehow pass inspection, but I suspected that Tolar may not have been up to the task.
And what about Tolar? Did you kill him too?
Think of them both as tragic victims of war. If you can allow your anger to subside for a moment, you'll see that they did not die in vain. The Romulans will enter the war.
There's no guarantee of that.
Oh, but I think that there is. You see, when the Tal Shiar finishes examining the wreckage of Vrenak's shuttle, they'll find the burnt remnants of a Cardassian optolithic data rod which somehow miraculously survived the explosion. After painstaking forensic examination, they'll discover that the rod contains a recording of a high-level Dominion meeting at which the invasion of Romulus was being planned.
And then they'll discover that it is a fraud!
Oh, I don't think they will. Because any imperfections in the forgery will appear to be a result of the explosion. So, with a seemingly legitimate rod in one hand and a dead senator in the other, I ask you, Captain, what conclusion would you draw?
And so we learn why Sisko is so depressed. Garak was right. The plan worked, and the Romulans are joining the war. The captain muses that given the lives saved, are the deaths of Renak, a couple of criminals, and Sisko's self-respect really such a high price to pay? Sisko confesses that they aren't, and the episode ends with him deleting the log entry. This episode is clearly highly significant in the ongoing plot arc of Deep Space Nine, but even if you haven't seen any other episode, it works as an espionage thriller, as it's tense, thought-provoking, and well-paced. Despite being first broadcast in 1998, it feels remarkably contemporary, and I hereby present it for inclusion into the canon.
Thank you, John. Speaking of Johns, John, you're sort of our DS9 expert. Do you want to start us off?
Sure. Thanks. And thank you, John, for that presentation. As Dave said, I watch the show religiously. It, for me, is by far the best of the Trek series in terms of quality, had the most ambitious story, and easily the best acting and character development. This episode is from an extremely strong season in which, as was mentioned, the war between the Dominion and the Federation is really coming to a head. I know this episode is widely regarded as one of the series' best, but I personally have mixed feelings about it. For one, Avery Brooks, who I really like, is, I think, even he might admit, a bit of an overactor. So I'm not sure an episode where the conceit is him keeping a video log is the best showcase of his talents. I also find the first 10 minutes really presentational and kind of pleased with themselves. And, you know, the whole bit about trying to draw the Romulans into the war, it just could be shorthanded a lot. It's overly explained and, you know, we're not slow children here. I find that mock debate, again, kind of pleased with itself, the clip that was played. And I just feel like the framing device eats up time that could be put toward other elements of the story that I found more interesting. It's like someone had this idea for Avery Brooks's Emmy reel, and it probably sounded good in theory, but I found it really corny in execution. All that said, there's a lot to like in this episode, I think. One of the show's great strengths is the depth of its bench. I find the supporting characters on balance a lot more interesting than the principals, with a couple exceptions, Kira among them. To illustrate that belief, Garak is my favorite character on the show, bar none. Weyoun is my second favorite, but he's not in the episode, enough for my tastes. And there were moments of Sisko I really enjoyed when Quark's like raking him over the coals about, are you offering me a bribe? And he just like kind of chews his cheeks and can't really do anything other than look really frustrated. And also when Bashir like starts lecturing about the contraband biogel, and he looks so bored at the moral lecture that he's getting from him. I found that really enjoyable. And the last part of the episode, I found once Renak arrives on the station, I think the pace gets much better. It's a lot more interesting. I will give a shout out to that actor, Stephen McCaddy, as a Canadian. He's very good, I think. Although, honestly, the clip that was played before where he's like, it's a fake, is my least favorite part of his performance. But the rest of it, where he's just kind of like condescending and knowing his position of superiority in the negotiation, is just really good, I think.
The actor is the poor man's Robert Patrick. You'd never recognize him, but once you look him up, you'll be like, oh yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. And I think even the framing device improves as it goes on. Like there are moments when Sisko's talking about his dad that just feel a lot, less is more, rather than, you know, the kind of yelling about his moral conflict and how he's worked through it and stuff. So for me, this episode is good and definitely memorable. It's got a strong place in the series' arc, but I can think of other episodes that are better from this season. So I'm kind of on the fence.
All right. Well, let me go next, because you said a lot of what I wanted to say. I found the framing device of this episode super clunky. The whole log thing, not only clunky, but the way he like stares into the camera and then like 2 degrees off the center of the lens, as if that makes a difference and doesn't make the thing like less awkward. That sort of was like, it could have been stronger. Like this could have been a conversation between him and Dax, you know, like they share secrets all the time. It could have been an extension of them talking about, you know, their little role-playing debate club at the start. I didn't really care for that. What I do like about this episode and what I like about DS9 is that it takes chances with the Star Trek universe. You know, that it is a little bit, I mean, I wouldn't call this show gritty, but compared to, you know, Next Generation, I guess, perhaps it is. And I like when they sort of like throw that Roddenberry utopian sense, you know, back at the universe. You know, there's Roddenberry created this thing where we didn't need money anymore. And, you know, everybody's just happy to do their part. And yet all that stuff still exists. And I always thought that was weird about Star Trek. Like, they like to say that this, this, and this doesn't exist, or we don't need it anymore. But they never actually explain the mechanics of what replaced it. Like, on Earth, is everybody just happy to do their stuff? Like, is there no way to get ahead? That kind of stuff. So I like on Deep Space Nine, it's like, yeah, you want something, you pay for it. And that stuff still has to exist in the universe despite Starfleet and their anti-capitalist agenda going everywhere. On that tip, I will say every time Quark comes up, it's like, oh, guys, you created space Jews. you can say you didn't all you want, but you created stereotypical space Jews. They're all obsessed about money all the time. Their giant ears. They're like World War II propaganda poster come to life.
Completely. Yeah.
And I know that this has been debated up and down, and I'm sure the writers said that was never our intention. And I'm sure they didn't have a note that says, you know, it would be great, space Jews. I'm sure they didn't, but I think that's what they created. I mean, and every time that comes up, I'm like, oh boy, you know, Quark is a problematic character. He's not in it much, but every time he comes up, there you are. I do really like the arc of this episode, where it goes from, you know, Sisko trying to bend his boundaries a little bit, and then Garak just sort of blowing them open. Then him having to deal with the success of Garak's plan is great. And as I was saying before, like, I love it when they throw that kind of thing back at Star Trek, where it all can't be nice and neat. It can't all be just talking and diplomacy. Sometimes you have to blow up a senator. And those are the reasons I like this episode. But I would find, like, the scenery chewing by Captain Sisko, the framing device, and the fact that the first half of this episode needed to go at double speed probably is going to keep me from voting this into the canon tar.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said. This is, it is, it was slow. And I felt like, you know, even though I was not a regular watcher of the show, that his, this accomplice that sort of used Sisko as a dupe, the Cardassian Taylor or whatever.
Yep.
That guy. Fair. That he was not a regular character was my impression.
He is like, Garak is,
like, recurring, but not a main guy.
Yeah, he's in it a lot, though. Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah. Then, all right. Well, then that takes away one of my criticisms, which was this would have more impact if it was someone we knew better, but if that was someone that we knew,
oh, yeah,
then never mind.
Yeah.
But yes, the scene with Quark is not good. not great to watch. Has not aged well.
The rules of acquisition.
Yeah.
Yes, every man has his price.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, mm-hmm. But also, like, you know, the question of at what time, at what point is it okay? Is it acceptable morally to manufacture evidence for what may be a greater moral purpose? I mean, it's kind of an evergreen story, and honestly, like, I could stand to have it, scenery chew or not. I would like to have Avery Brooks narrate just about any story to me,
yeah,
because he has such a lovely voice. It's very pleasing to listen to. So I thought this was good and made me want to, you know, keep watching and find out how this all ended. But, you know, I defer to John that if this is not a series high. Mm-hmm. Sarah.
Yep. Pretty much everyone has said what I was going to say. My first note is Homeland in Space. And yeah. I liked that's what they were trying to do. But you definitely see with the like 45, 47 minute runtime of these shows from back in the day, that there is a lot of padding and a lot of sort of like stodgy thinking about structure of the episode, that if you made this show today for a streaming service or premium cable, that it might look a little different and you might not be in the position of doing so much telling instead of showing how this setup worked. On the other hand, they might have, you know, wimped out and gone with a flashback. Who can say? I will say that in that final exchange, when Garrick is breaking it down, that's pretty well acted, I think, for given that he's like explaining the whole setup,
right?
The whole, like, you know, Garrick's Manchurian 11 thing that he's trying to do. It does sort of grow on you suspense wise this episode, but it has to do that. I agree that the first 10 minutes are quite didactic and self-satisfied. It does take a while to get going. It is like Quark. I can't. Mm-hmm. It's too Odo light for my taste, as these things go. But it was like, it was pleasant. I was interested. Like Tara, I was interested to know how it turned out, but I would probably just Google it or ask John Potts or Ramos, actually. This was a great presentation, but I think this is, despite its being sort of like prescient on the whole WMD situation in 2001 and two, I think this is not quite there for me. Shall we vote?
Yeah. Before we vote, I just want to say Deep Space Nine has the worst sets in all of Star Trek. They are so bad. They look like they're all made out of vacuum form things. And that's all I have to say about that. All right. So voting, I am giving it a marginal no. Sarah D. Bunting.
Agreed. Marginal no.
John Ramos.
Dave, before I vote, I just wanted to say, point out the part where Beta Z got invaded by the Dominion. I was like, well, guess they didn't see that coming.
And Tara Arrieta.
Yeah, same. Okay. But thank you for the presentation, of course.
All right. That means Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Season 6, Episode 19, In the Pale Moonlight. I'm sorry to tell you, you are not in the extra hot great canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
No.
It is time for the winner and loser of the week. Tara has our winner.
Winner is Senior Citizens.
Oh, finally.
Because Tyra Banks, in her triumphant question mark return to America's Next Top Model, has removed the what was formerly the max age on contestants. It used to be 27. Now, apparently, it is infinity.
Wow.
I feel like this is heading to a situation where this gets announced on the show with fake contestant Betty White or some other horseshit. Oh, hopefully boy. They can't pay her enough to do that. But yeah, congratulations to the older models who, let's face it, have as great a chance as any top model contestant of actually having a career, which is basically none. Dave?
I have a winner as well I wanted to do, and that is Bears Beats Star Trek. Speaking of Star Trek, Rainn Wilson has been cast as Harry Mudd.
Oh, yeah.
On Star Trek Discovery.
Yep.
And that is great casting. Harry Mudd, yeah, it was a character on the original series, sort of a trickster kind of guy. And I think that's brilliant casting. I also wanted to say I tweeted that when it happened. I just tweeted out Bears Beats Star Trek. So many people tweeted at me back. It's Battlestar Galactica.
This is why we don't need that show on Comedy Central hosted by Moshe Kasher.
Exactly. You know what else we don't need, guys? Game Time. But we're doing it anyways.
We got a loser. You forgot the loser.
Yeah, Sarah's. It's me for forgetting the loser.
Finally, in the doc, the loser was Dave.
Yeah.
I propose we reinstate that.
Loser of the week.
Just kidding. Mine is actually also Senior Citizens, technically, but it's the Comedy Pantheon. The founder of the Groundlings comedy troupe, Gary Austin, died over the weekend. He was 75. The Groundlings was like the feeder org for Saturday Night Live from its inception and up through today, probably. Ton of people came out of there. He was a mentor to them all, and but like kept a low pro, stayed outside the business, and just like helped people learn how to do improv, basically. So it's a loss for the comedy community.
Speaking of losses, do you know what time it is?
It's time for Gary Austin time. To rest in power?
No, it's time for somebody to lose.
Oh!
Hello, everybody. This is the fourth game time of the season. Our current standings are Tara 2 points, valued guests 1 point, and Sarah still looking to get on the board. Today we are playing IMDb Firsts from John Connors.
Ooh, okay.
Not Connor. Who earns himself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his very choosing. The rules are simple. John has entered the most popular first names in the United States over the last 100 years into IMDb one by one.
Wow.
As you know, IMDb gives you a suggested results when you type a name into the search field.
Yes.
Name and one property for which that actor is most known in an order that some way shows popularity according to the whims of IMDb and its users. So search term. Get that name, shows you what everybody thinks that person's most well known for, basically.
Oh yeah, Joe Reed and I developed a whole like game around this, a whole drinking game.
I will give you the first name. Players, that's you guys, must supply the actor's name and that TV property that comes first in the list for each of 60 popular names in the United States.
Okay.
2 points for a correct answer pair, so name and show.
Yep.
1 point if you can only name one, but there's going to be no hints. All
okay,
right.
Because
the hints are like totally would give the other point away. So here's an example. The name is Kim. Any guesses who that would be and what show? The actor's name, Kim.
Raver?
Nope. Kim Cattrall.
Oh,
Sex in the City, according to IMDb. So that's how the game is played. One caveat. If the name that comes up is of an actor who has done TV and movies, mm-hmm. we only use that name if the TV show is their primary driver.
Okay, got
okay?
it.
Gotcha. So George
good.
Does not give you George Clooney
right.
because Gravity is the thing that's listed and not ER.
Of course.
Make sense?
Yes.
All right, let's throw it to Pinky.
We will start with Tara.
All right, we're going Tara, mm-hmm. John, Sarah.
Okay.
Are we ready to play IMDb Firsts?
Yes.
Yes.
I have put all the names in alphabetical order.
Okay.
Our first name, Andrew. Who's the actor and what's the show that IMDb associates with the name Andrew First?
Oh, man. This is harder than it seems. Because the first Andrew that comes to mind is not a TV person. Is it Andrew Shue? Shit.
Andrew Lincoln, The Walking
Dead. That's what I was
going
to guess. Oh,
of
shit.
Course.
But I would just like to acknowledge the Shue. That was well done.
Thank you.
That was brilliant.
I was thinking Andrew McCarthy was the first Andrew that sprang to mind, of course.
Mine too.
Mm-hmm.
The Kingdom? Kingdom Hospital?
Here's your first question, John. Angela. Character, I mean, actor name. First name is Angela. Who's that actor? What's the show?
I'll have to go with Lansbury.
And the show?
Murder, She Wrote.
That is
Yay!
Worth 2 points.
2 points?
Nice.
Oh my God.
Yep. All right, Sarah, here's your first name. It's Anna.
Anna. Ooh. I feel like this is not going to be right. But it's that Tower Records effect. Go into the record store and completely forget all the music you wanted to buy. My mind has emptied of Anna's, except for Torv.
Ah.
Hmm.
Okay. Ah!
Decent guess. It's Anna Gunn.
That was
Breaking
that was
Bad.
Yep.
Back to Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony.
Is this Anthony Bourdain?
Anthony Edwards.
Oh,
ER.
Of course.
To Mr. Ramos, Ashley. Ashley.
God.
Ashley, gonna need an answer. Gonna go a little fast on these.
No. No Ashleys.
Anybody? Take a
guess.
No.
Williams?
Benson. It's Benson.
Oh, okay.
Ashley is Benson. Ashley Benson from Pretty Little Liars.
Oh, sure.
Sarah D. Bunting, Barbara.
Oh.
Famous TV Barbara.
Get this for your mom.
I know, right? Oh my gosh. Barbara. Barbara. Barbara.
Barbara Eden. Shit. I dreamed of Jeannie. Tara's
not
a tough one.
Guessed.
Betty.
Betty White. Fuck you. She can't even beat the right answer.
Betty Buckley, it is enough.
Give me a break that she's a bigger Betty on TV than Betty White. Wow. No chance.
I bet if you put in Betty White, it would be like most famous for Lake Placid.
Whatever.
The Alligator Joss movie.
There's no way she's more famous than that. Than she is
John
for
Ramos.
Girls.
John Ramos. That's the IMDb twist. Brenda. Brenda.
Brenda.
I type Brenda into the IMDb search. This actor and show comes up. Her first name is Brenda.
All I can think of is Brenda Wash.
Brenda Strong, Desperate Housewives.
Oh, yeah.
Sarah D. Bunting, Brian.
Oh, no.
Brian with an I?
Yes.
Brian. Oh, well, it's not that guy. Brian Austin Green?
From?
Oh, really? Beverly Hills 90210?
Well, you got to give a pair. I can't give you a...
Right. Hey!
2 points.
I am amazing. So shocked. That's awesome.
Yeah, I need both answers before I tell you if one's right. Otherwise, I'm basically giving you a clue. So.
Right. Gotcha.
Carol for Tara. And it's not your mom.
Okay.
Carol.
Well, we both got our moms.
Famous TV Carol and the show.
Carol with... spelled same as like Christmas Carol? C-A-R-O-L?
Yep. You're going to be mad.
Okay, Carol Potter.
Carol Burnett.
Shit.
The Carol Burnett Show. Catherine for John. Catherine.
Catherine.
Catherine Bell from JAG. Yeah,
so I would have gone Bach from Dukes,
but that's with a K. We're going alpha order.
Yeah. Christine.
No, I know. Catherine Bach is a C. Sorry, what? Okay. Christine.
Christine for Sarah.
Christine Lottie of Chicago Hope.
Christine Baranski.
Baranski.
Ah!
Good wife. Tara. Ah. Christopher. Christopher. So the thing to remember with this game is that these results are largely generated by people searching on IMDb.
Sure.
So it's a very populist sort of list.
Is it Christopher Atkins from The Greatest American Hero?
It is.
Is that even him?
Our favorite fridge humper, Christopher Maloney.
Oh.
SBU. Cynthia. Cynthia.
Cynthia Nixon. From Sex and the City.
John!
Sarah D. Bunting, bring us into our first score break. Daniel.
Daniel. Daniel. Daniel. Daniel Travanti of Hill Street Blues. I don't know.
Hey!
What?
That's awesome.
Shit.
That brings us into our first score break.
Oh, boy. Well, tight game for some people. John and Sarah are tied with 4 each. I have goose egg.
All right, goose egg. That means I think this is your first Secretizer challenge, isn't it?
No. I've done this.
You've been here before?
Done this season.
All right, it is time for the Grossworth Equalizer.
Off the dog's bed. Help the dog.
Okay, we interrupt this game time because I have to help the dog onto his bed.
Well... That's not where your bag goes, Dave.
My apologies to Tara, Gordon Lightfoot, and the listening audience. Back to the game. This is the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge. Answer half of these 6 questions from the mid-80s TV box of Trivial Pursuit stuff things. Yep. Go. What soap opera followed Dallas on CBS for its first three seasons?
Knott's Landing?
Falcon Crest. What West Coast city's time is displayed on the second clock from the left in the WJM newsroom?
Los Angeles? Okay.
Who's the pretender to the throne of Bongo Congo?
Betty White.
No. It's Itchy Brother.
Of course.
No idea.
How dare I not know that?
What?
What does Wally grow to impress Julie Foster on Leave It to Beaver?
Marijuana.
Okay, I want to say this is not the answer. Uh-huh. It's definitely not pubes.
No.
A mustache?
Yes.
Okay.
Lip pubes. Who went from Mork and Mindy to My Sister Sam?
Pam Dauber.
Correct.
Also to Marriage with Mark Harmon.
Here's a bonus one. What prison did Jim Rockford serve time in?
San Quentin.
Wow. Hey. Well done.
Nice All right, job. So
you are now on the board. Back to the game.
Asterisk.
Tara?
Yes.
David.
David Boreanaz.
David Schwimmer. So Friends. Number 17.
Spread Eagle.
For John. Deborah.
Tara's favorite, Deborah Messing from Will and Grace.
IMDb strikes again. It's Deborah Ann Wall from Daredevil.
Oh, gotta get the spelling.
I should have asked for the spelling, but it wouldn't have helped.
Sarah D. Bunting, Donald. Donald. Yes.
Donald Sutherland of... Oh, what the fuck was the name of that show? Crossing Lines?
Donald Glover, Community.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry, buddy.
Better Donald.
Donna.
Donna Pascal from Out of This World?
Donna Douglas. Beverly Hillbillies.
Okay, sure.
John Ramos, Edward.
Edward James Olmos from Battlestar Galactica.
That is a good guess.
Good one. Edward. Can I steal meal?
Yes. Do you have one? Okay.
Edward Herman from Gilmore Girls. Hey.
Nice.
Good 2-point steal. That was worth it. Sarah D. Bunting. Frank.
Frank Sinatra, the Texaco Radio Hour.
Frank Delane, Fear the Walking Dead. Gary. Oh,
no idea. Gary spelled with one or two R's.
One R.
Oh.
Good question. Gary.
With one R. Shit.
Gary.
Gary David Goldberg, creator of Family Ties.
Gary Sinise.
Oh.
He took his legs.
Yes, I'm New York.
Correct.
Oh, God.
All right. We know it's not George Clooney. It's George for John Ramos.
George. George, shoot.
Oh.
No, don't have it.
Anybody?
No.
CSI?
Okay.
And also MacGyver? George Yads? Yads?
Oh, George Eads.
Eads. Wow, that's how you say it? Eads?
I assume.
All right. Gregory. Sarah D. Bunting. Gregory.
Oh, Gregory. Gregory Itzen, 24.
That's what I would have said.
It's a show you've watched.
Gregory Smith.
Gregory Smith.
Oh,
Everwood.
Oh.
Tara Ariano. Yes. Helen.
Oh, God.
Helen. You type in Helen.
Yeah.
You get this person in this show.
Helen Hunt, Mad About You. Oh, thank God.
Nice. Yeah.
Stupid brain kicking in.
John Ramos. James. Yes.
Are they all scripted shows?
Looks like it, but I'll tell you, this one is. I'll give you that hint. as I listen to
it. Scripted. Okay.
All right, no, they're not all scripted shows, but most of them are.
Okay. Got it. Well, I don't know.
The Blacklist, James Spader. Yeah.
Mm.
Jason.
Oh, Gone with the Beak.
Jason. Oh, yeah. Sarah D. Bunting. Jason.
Jason, yes. I heard you. Jason.
David. July, David. August, September, October, November.
Jason.
Keep in mind, this is IMDb.
Empty to Jason's, I'm afraid.
Anybody?
Jason Priestley?
There are two.
It's not.
I had two others, Jason Segel or Jason Alexander.
No, it's not those either.
Jason Robards?
Wow.
It's a very popular show.
I don't know.
On HBO. Game of Thrones.
There's a Jason.
Jason
on Game
Momoa.
Of oh, right.
Oh, that
sure,
guy.
That
oh,
guy.
My God.
Tariano Jeffrey.
Jeffrey Jones Deadwood.
Jeffrey Donovan, Burn Notice. No. Jennifer.
Really?
John Ramos, Jennifer.
Jennifer Love Hewitt, Party of Five.
Jennifer Aniston, Friends.
Oh. Jennifer Love Hewitt, too.
Second,
this game is diabolical.
Second score break.
No, Sarah.
Is coming up after this question. Tara. Who's running the show? It's me.
Okay.
John.
John?
Yeah. J-O-H-N.
John. Oh, my God. So many.
There are a lot.
John. Stamos, Full House.
Good guess. Krasinski, The Office. But that, I think Stamos was probably the best bet.
Stamos!
Stamos!
Well, now I have 6 points and John and Sarah are tied with 4 each.
Ooh, tied at 4 each. And Sarah is losing in the season, so that means this one's for you, Sarah. It's time to go into the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge.
All right, then.
What game show got rolling with the line, "Thank you, my friends. Thank you, Don Pardo"?
Price is Right?
Jeopardy.
Oh.
What Western theme begins, "The lawman came with the sun"? You want me to sing it? I don't know the tune, but I can sing it. "The lawman came with the sun."
She answered Rawhide.
No, it's The Lawman's.
What?
TV. What did all my children's Chuck and Donna do when they were stuck in a cave and thought they'd never get out alive?
Grief pubes.
They made love.
That is the actual answer. Made love.
Wow. So, she deserves an extra point for that, in my opinion.
We'll give Dave points, but we can't skew the actual results. So we'll give her 69 Dave points.
Bob's a cave.
Who is the star of Pee-wee's Playhouse?
What?
Who is the star of Pee-wee's Playhouse?
Pee-wee Herman, a.k.a. Paul Rubens.
Yeah, Pee-wee Herman. What spaced out TV hero is accompanied by a robot named Twinkie?
I don't know.
Spaced out TV hero.
I don't know.
All right, I thought you might want to guess. Buck Rogers. What deputy's temporary New York City assignment is at Manhattan's 27th precinct? Need this for the point.
What deputy's temporary assignment?
Yes. That's good old Sam McCloud. You know.
Sure.
Sammy. Tara, Jonathan.
Taylor Thomas, Home Improvement.
Thanks.
Okay.
Breaking Bad / Wise Guy.
That's good.
Sure.
John Stamos. Stamos. John Stamos.
Stamos.
Ramos! Justin.
Justin.
Justin Hartley, Smallville.
Oh, I
Catherine with a K.
Oh.
Catherine, R-Y-N or E-R-I-N-E?
Latter.
Okay. Catherine. Ah, I can't remember her name, her last name now.
Well, you can
Smash
still,
Lady.
You can provide both information. If you only get one right, you still get the point. I'm just not giving you hints.
Oh.
You okay, want to just so, say Catherine somebody and smash, that's a acceptable answer.
Oh.
That is my answer.
Both are wrong. Catherine Heigl, Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, her.
Kimberly. Kimberly.
God. This is so painful. I don't know.
Kimberly Williams Paisley from According to Jim. Larry.
Oh, I would have guessed Nashville. Pork blood.
What is it to John?
John Larry? Ramos. Ramos Stamos. Larry. And I say to you, sir, Larry. Good luck.
Oh, really? God.
I mean, I would never
know. Well, Larry Hagman. Dallas.
No, that is a fantastic guess.
Yeah.
Larry Linville from MASH.
Sure.
Yeah. Laura. Speaking of Laura's, happy birthday, Laura. Spelled differently, though.
Laura. Laura. Laura Linney, Tales of the City?
Laura Prepon, That 70s Show. Linda.
Linda Lavin Alice.
Linda Cardellini.
Okay.
PR/ Freaks and Geeks. I guess they were both up there. Margaret.
Margaret.
Margaret. I type in Margaret. This person comes up in this show.
Say that again.
Anybody? Take a guess?
No.
Margaret Cho. Drop Dead Diva or really? All-American Girl.
Okay.
Yeah. Mark.
Huh. Mark?
Yep.
With a C or a K?
With a K.
Okay.
There's really... Well, actually, there's a couple. Mark Harmon, NCIS.
Yeah, that would have been my guess. Mark Valley, Boston Legal.
What?
Yep.
Holy moly.
Mary.
Fuck that.
Mary Tyler Moore, the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Mary Louise Parker Weeds. Matthew.
What?
Matthew. John Ramos, Matthew.
Well,
IMDb.
Learning from past mistakes, I'm going to say Matthew Perry, Friends.
What?
Damn it.
IMDb. Matthew Gray
Goobler,
Goobler from Criminal Minds. Yeah. Melissa.
Oh, what?
Melissa.
Melissa. Melissa Gilbert, Little House on the Fucking Prairie.
Is it Melissa Joan Hart? Is it Melissa McCarthy?
Melissa McCarthy for Gilmore Girls, Mike and Molly. Michelle for Tara Ariana.
With two L's or one L?
Two.
Michelle Monaghan, The Path. Definitely the wrong answer.
Michelle Trachtenberg.
No.
Oh, Trachtenberg.
Buffy the Vampire
sure,
Slayer.
Sure, of course.
Nancy.
Get up.
Nancy.
Nancy, John.
Nancy.
That is your name, not a slur.
I thought you said Mancy with an M.
Oh, yeah, you of all people. Nancy McKee in Facts of Life.
100% what I would have said.
Nancy Travis, Last Man Standing.
Sure.
Nicholas. Bring us into our...
Nicholas.
Yeah, this is our three-quarter mark. Nicholas, score break
Nicholas
after this.
Brendan, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yay! 100% what I
Thank God.
And Dr. Phil.
Nice. All right, now Sarah and I are tied with six each, and it is John's turn in the equalizer with 4 points.
All right, ready for this, John?
Get it, John.
Yeah, who's Dynasty.
Who's the white wimp with the black? Jesus, who's the white wimp with the black wife on Jefferson's on the Jefferson?
Oh God, give me a second. Tom Willis.
Nice.
Wow.
Who? From a question that would never be on a card today.
No.
Oh my God.
I do double take there.
So many things wrong with that one sentence question.
Who, after auditioning for Leave It to Beaver, announced, "I gotta go now. I got a Cub Scout meeting."
I don't know.
Jerry Mathers. Yep. Yeah. What morning program has logged more air hours than any other U.S. show as of this card's writing?
Sometime in the 80s.
Morning show
Good
program.
Morning, America.
Today show.
Mm.
What word was spelled wrong on Mary Richards' Teddy Award?
Mary?
Nice.
What 57 and 58-year-olds starred in the 1986 sequel to Route 66? Please tell me it's called Route 67.
57 and 58-year-olds?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. George Maharis and Martin Milner.
Of course.
All right, get
you know,
this one.
Sure.
You still got one left. You can do it. Who replaced Henry Reasoner? Or Reasoner?
Harry Reasoner.
What'd I say?
Henry.
Oh, sorry. Harry. On 60 Minutes.
What the fuck's his name?
John, don't say Benson.
Yeah, don't.
It's not Benson. Okay.
It's not Benson. It's Morley Safer.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the game. Everybody's got a few questions left.
Okay.
Game is tight.
Yep.
Anybody's game. Here we go. Tar Ariana Nicole.
Oh, God.
Nicole.
Nicole Kidman, Big Little Lies. Incorrect.
Nicole Eggert.
Nicole Berry?
Oh, Nicole Eggert.
Charles in Charge slash Baywatch. Eggert. Pamela.
Pamela Anderson, Baywatch.
Yeah, you'd think. Pamela Adlin.
Adlin
from King of the Hill and Louie. Patricia.
No. Patricia Heaton from Home Improvement.
1 point. Patricia Heaton from Everybody Loves Raymond or The Middle.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Wrong person.
Patricia Richardson is Home Improvement.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Paul. Paul. And wait, hang on a sec. Everybody's got four questions left.
Yeah.
I'm going to give everybody one more additional hint. Who might be searching for these people? Paul. Horny teenagers.
Okay.
Lady teenagers.
I still don't know. I'm sorry. The only Paul I can think of is Paul Rudd. I know that's not right.
Paul Wesley from Vampire Diaries.
Yes, of course.
John Ramos. Raymond. Who's looking this up? Old people.
Raymond Burr, Perry Mason.
Whoop, right. Yep.
Yay.
Great.
Nice.
That was 2 points.
Yep.
Richard. And who's looking this up? Problem Solvers.
What?
Yes. People who like to solve problems are searching for
people
Richard.
People who like to solve problems are looking up Richard.
So far,
Richard
you're right.
The third?
Is it Richard Dawson?
No.
Is it
Richard Dean Anderson, MacGyver?
Yes.
Oh! Okay.
All right.
Yep.
Tara Ariana. Ronald, who's looking this up? People who missed the Cold War.
Wow.
Really? Ronald Reagan, the news? I have no idea.
1 point. Ronald Reagan, General Electric Theater.
Okay.
Jesus Christ.
Wow.
John Ramos, your name, Sandra. People that are searching for Sandra would be surprised people.
Surprised people?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, is it?
I don't know. Sandra Bernhardt, Roseanne.
Sandra. Oh, Grey's Anatomy.
Love it.
Sarah D. Bunting. Guess what your name is? It's Sarah.
Sarah?
Oh.
And your searcher are Siamese twins.
Is it Sarah with an H?
Yes.
Okay.
People who are stitched together are searching for this Sarah.
What? Wait, wow, really? Okay, Sarah Paulson, American Horror Story?
Hey!
2 points. Tara Ariano.
Yep.
Sharon. Uh-huh. People who are searching for this are experiencing terrible things. Terrible things.
Oh, okay. Sharon Needles, RuPaul's Drag Race. Sharon Lawrence, something. I don't know.
Sharon Horgan, Catastrophe.
Ah, oh. Of course.
John Ramos. Shirley. And the...
Can't be serious.
Stop calling him that.
People that are searching for Shirley are trapped in a bus.
Yeah. Okay.
Trapped in a bus.
That's a terrible clue.
If I think if it is who I think it is.
Yeah. You could connect the dots if you had an inkling, I suppose.
God, I don't know.
Is it Shirley Jones?
Yes.
From the Partridge Family?
Yes. From the Partridge Family. All right, here's for Sarah D. Bunting, Stephanie, and the people who are searching for this are going to get beat up for interfering in this person's private business.
We're going to get beat up for interfering in this person's
private business.
Private business.
Stephanie.
Stephanie.
Standard spelling on Stephanie? PH?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's Stephanie?
No.
That's what I was thinking.
Me too.
Damn it. I want to guess that anyway, but I don't know.
Any guesses?
No.
Brooklyn 99.
Oh, Stephanie Beatrice.
Beatrice.
Oh. Sorry.
All right, here comes everybody's last question. So quick score break.
Okay, well. Sarah is kicking her asses with 9. I have 7. John has 6.
All right. So a tie is possible, but
not likely.
Tara needs to get this one. Your first name is Steven.
PH or V?
PH.
Okay.
And people that are searching for this, are quivering.
Ew.
Oh, no. No. Oh, is it Stephen Amell from Arrow? Okay.
Ties up the game.
Nice.
John Ramos, Stephen, and...
with a V, I assume.
Yeah, Stephen with a V. Mm-hmm. And the people that are searching for this like to go to a good old-fashioned head bash.
Head bash?
Steven, good old-fashioned head bash.
I just want to say Steve Holt after that.
Steve Holt.
No, I don't know.
Anybody?
No.
Steven Yeun, Walking Dead.
Oh, of course.
Head bash. Yep. Bringing us... So, Sarah D. Bunting needs to only get one piece of this puzzle.
Correct.
To win the game.
That's right.
Your name is Timothy. Timothy
off of his pants, justified.
Timothy. Off with his pants.
Such a good one to end on. You didn't even give her the clue.
2 points.
Sarah.
Wow. Congratulations, Sarah. Here's our shits and giggles question, our former tiebreaker. This is going to be worth 10 day points. No, wait. This is going to be worth 1,701 day points. The name is William. 1,701 points.
Shatner, Star Trek.
Correct.
Sarah. Well, Sarah is by far the leader in day points now.
I hope so.
Sarah. Sarah.
Nice job, Sarah.
Ooh, thank you. That was a tough one. Great game.
That was good.
That was really fun. Hard.
Yeah. I should have done those clues from the start, but oh well. Live and learn, people. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We awoke from our winter slumber to discuss the spring mid-season TV shows we're looking forward to, the ones we're not excited about, and the ones we're wondering how they exist at all. We went then around the dial with stops at Review, Legion, 13 Reasons Why, and Clams. Crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah was the winner of this week's Game Time. Ooh. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
Gibbs,
Sarah D. Bunting,
Ramos,
and John Ramos,
Betty White,
thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time. Right here on Extra Hot Great.
This is the place. Clams.
You did it, you guys.
You laughing earlier?
Yes.
So I was cutting that.
This is the place. Clams.
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 This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.